So much has happened in the Premier League since we last spoke to you, and yet so little of it makes sense. Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Faithful podcast and FPL show brought to you by thefootballfaithful.com. I am your host, Steve McGovern, and having signed him on a free transfer, I'm joined by Andrew Ferguson of Fantasy Football Hub. How's it going, Andrew?
Thank you very much for having me on, Steve. Yeah, it's going well. My FPL season isn't going as, you know, as planned, but other than that, you know, just enjoying the football, enjoying the goals, and trying to make sense of what's going on every single day in the football world. It's been I can't remember a more crazy time in football.
Oh, it's crazy. Dare I ask you what your rank is?
Oh, please no.
No, we'll spare you.
No, it's fine. I'm just inside 4 million.
Okay,
and it sounds absolutely horrendous, and it absolutely is, but there are a couple of very high profile elite managers who are doing even worse, so it's, and I do think, you know, it's very, very early, and the variance in rank swings week on week and huge, so I'm not panicking just yet.
Yeah, I myself am at 3.3 million, so I'm not doing a great
You're
deal
hammering me.
Well, it was only for the first time last week I finally beat the average score, so I had a decent week, so I was happy enough with that. But it's just one of those seasons where it hasn't settled down yet, and we're just hoping we get a bit of consistency somewhere just to ease everyone's nerves. Now, today we'll take a broad look at the first month of the season to try and make some sort of sense of the madness that has befallen us and try to strategize for the future. First of all, Andrew, our listeners might be wondering, why the hell should we be taking, you know, advice from this lad who just breezed in? So tell us a bit about what you do with regards to Fantasy Football Hub.
Sure, yeah. So I joined the Hub a couple of years ago now as a freelance sort of writer, and then I got to know Will, and I started doing some editing for him, and I've actually joined now nearly full time. So I do the editing on the website, I do the publishing, I do some of the SEO work, I do the Hubs, the podcasts on FPL with Andy Green and Adam Hopcroft. I do the Sky One too with Dan Cox and Paul McNulty. Do some streams and videos and things as well, onboards writers, work on the Twitter and Instagram and stuff and things as well. So and I did have a reasonable record, so I've in between about 2014 and 2019 I finished inside the top 20k every season, and had a best finish of around 700th, which was, you know, obviously a really good season, but last season I finished about 400,000, and this season I'd be over the moon with 400,000. So just kind of a bit about me and what I do at the Hub. Yeah.
Jesus, by the sounds of it, is there anything you don't do
for them? No, it's brilliant. You know, I like to be involved with everything. I love fantasy football. You know, I've been playing for 20 odd years. I've been playing FPL for about 7 or 8 seasons. And, I'm just really, really fortunate that Will took a chance on me, and I just really enjoy it. You know, working full-time in fantasy football is something I've dreamed about for years, so I'm very, very fortunate to be able to have the opportunity.
Yeah, we had Will Thomas on the third episode of this show talking about Fantasy Football Hub and all the great things you guys do, and I think, you know, some of our listeners will enjoy a lot that you guys offer, I think. Now, we were going to leave kind of the game week 4 review until next week, but it's just too hard to ignore. Just some absolute mental games. I mean, first of all, on Saturday we had Leeds Man City drawing 1-1, and that was, you know, it was just such a crazy end-to-end game that just had this weird flow to it. Brilliant result for Leeds, and we thought, Jesus, like, that is, you know, the big result of the weekend. Look at that, 1-1 draw between these two teams, and then bam, Leicester City lose 3-0 to West Ham. Bam again, Man United losing 6-1 at home to Spurs, and then wasn't even finished there. Last game of the weekend, Aston Villa trouncing Liverpool 7-2. I honestly can barely believe these scorelines on the screen in front of me, because they look like one of those mental Boxing Day fixtures from the 60s or 70s where there was just goals going in left, right and centre. Do you have any sort of handle on this weekend? And what was the particular highlight for you, Andrew?
I think the highlight for me, so I'm a Spurs fan, so obviously the 6-1 win was obviously fantastic. I think the highlight in terms of, you know, you get those kind of moments at times where you just shrug your shoulders and slump in your seat. I was preparing for a live stream actually on the Sunday evening, and it was due to start at 9 o'clock. So I was kind of setting up, you know, and we'd already had all the action, all the drama, and, you know, I kind of written all my notes and prepped and things, and the Spurs game had finished, and, you know, it's obviously Villa and Liverpool. So I've fully prepped. And as I'm kind of setting up well to go live, I just see Villa scoring goal after goal after goal after goal. So in terms of like highlight term of the weekend, you know, Spurs looked absolutely fantastic. I think, you know, Everton again are doing playing really well. James Rodriguez, what a sign he's been. He's really, you know, he's bringing the best out of that team. I think with Palace and Chelsea, I think Chelsea had the most unconvincing 4-0 win ever. West Ham looked to have completely turned their form on his head. I think the two games on the Sunday afternoon, the Arsenal and Wolves one, kind of weren't the best. But I really enjoyed Leeds Man City's 1-1. I know it sounds a bit silly, you know, compared to a 6-1 and 7-2, but watching both teams after 75 minutes, absolutely exhausted, just, you know, almost falling over each other, just trying to get the ball forward, you know, break after break after break, was so entertaining. Yeah. So I think in terms of, you know, just watching that was a brilliant match and a highlight of the weekend, I think.
Well, that game was mad, because I think on another day, that game could have ended 4-4.
It could have. Right,
you know, yeah. I wonder if maybe because the conditions were terrible, like it was bucketing down. I wonder on a dry day how that game might have gone, because it was just mad. And to a lot of these games, it had a very, especially the Villa Liverpool one, had a very like five-a-side Astro turf feel about it. Like where just goals are flowing in and it makes no sense. There's no real rhythm to it. It's just like bang, bang, bang. And just, it's hard to know what to read into these matches, especially as a, you know, as a fantasy football player. Like the Villa one, like three of those goals had massive deflections on it. So you're already thinking, right, is this really been like this super Villa performance that we can, you know, depend on them going forward? Who knows? I'm just wondering if it's ever, do you think it's going to settle down? Do you think it's just going to continue this way? Because we're a month into the season now, and teams just don't seem to have a grip yet.
I personally think that the impact of the empty stadiums is, you know, was very understated. I think both in terms of, you know, the kind of atmosphere and the urgency of the players. You know, if you can imagine it, when you watch it without the crowd, without the crowd noise on it, it kind of reminds me of what's like a training game. And there's just that kind of real match urgency with, you know, wherever it's 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people behind you urging you on, you know, it's just not there. So I do think there's been massive lapses of urgency, concentration, and I think defenders in particular. So, you know, we've seen a lot of penalties, but again, I think the handball have been overstated a little bit. I still think there's only been about 6 handballs out of some like 23 or 24. You know, odd penalties.
Was there even a handball penalty given this past weekend?
No, there wasn't. Yeah. If you think of, you know, there was a penalty each in the Man United and Spurs game, even the week before when, you know, Vardy scored his hat trick. You know, he scored the two. It was all fouls in the box. You know, so I think the handball is overstated, but I just think that the empty stadiums are having a massive impact. And I did actually see an interview with Harry Maguire, I want to say. Was it Michael Keane? It might be Michael Keane. And he said that because of players being in isolation, because pre-season was so short, players just aren't fit and they aren't training all together as a team and things as well. So that's kind of clearly had an impact as well. And I think as well that teams are just like having a go as well. You know, they're not kind of just sitting back and, you know, kind of scared anymore, like 11 men behind the ball. Just looking at Villa and Liverpool, you know, it's just absolutely incredible to see, you know, the kind of, like, Villa could have scored 10 against Liverpool, and you ever have said that in the, you know, in my entire football kind of life of like, you know, 34 or 35 years, they could have scored 10 and they really could have. Absolutely mad. What are your kind of thoughts on there? On why we're seeing this?
Well, just because you mentioned Liverpool there, a thought that occurred to me the other day just about Liverpool and how Jurgen Klopp is one of those managers who lives off the energy of the crowd, and he tries to G up his team through that. I think the only manager who does it, who is more like that, is Diego Simeone. So he's one of those managers that thrives on it. So it's interesting to see if that has any long-term effect on Liverpool with no crowds for the new year, at least it looks like. But one thing that kind of occurred to me as well was, A lot of players also were on holiday very close to the beginning of the season. I know Miguel Delaney mentioned this as well, how this was a, you know, in some piece he mentioned that this was a problem for some teams coming back and stuff like that. And I thought actually, I didn't think so many players would be gone for like 2 weeks after the season ended and going off to, you know, we saw the problems with Harry Maguire in Greece and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, are players really going away? Like, it's the middle of the pandemic. The season is right around the corner. I don't blame anyone for wanting to get a break away, but it's like, this is taking a risk. Like, this is mental. And you all have to start preparing very soon. So I think that might be like, maybe it's only like at 1% part of the reason, but I think it all adds up into this whole thing we're seeing where like the lack of preparation is definitely having an effect. I think the best kind of analysis came from Jonathan Liu in his piece for The Guardian this week, where he calls it silly season. He says in it, there's no definitive answer. You can talk about fatigue, penalties, VAR, no crowds. There is no definitive thing. It's like this mishmash of things. And he described it as a circus of dazed, drained, haunted, weirded out players forced through a relentless 13 months slog and expected to play with 90 minute intensity. And honestly, you can't put it better than that. Like that gets all of it there in one sentence. We're like, what are we expecting from these players? Like, they're not going to be the same. Like, Harry Maguire did not become a bad defender overnight. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and whether you know, you could argue whether he's world class or not, but he didn't become a bad one overnight. You know, and it's the same with the Liverpool defense. Like, they didn't just become clueless, you know, in the space of a week or two. You know, it's so it is kind of like I think this is now par for the course, and it might be a while, but with football coming almost every couple of days, I don't know when it's going to settle down. So yeah, that's kind of my long-winded takeaway from the season so far.
I think you're absolutely right, and you know, I think the journalist you mentioned was right as well. And what better way now to give them all a rest than to send them off on 3 internationals for 2 weeks during during a pandemic? Goodness, it was going to happen there.
That's the mental thing, is sending all these players on planes all over Europe and the world and just play. I think it's a recipe for disaster. And considering that also actually the uncertainty over COVID as well, just that alone obviously will have an effect, because we see a number of players who have tested positive recently. So yeah, it's going to be a wild season, and I don't know how it's going to shake out, but we might as well move on to our biggest regrets of the season to date. And this is something we like to do on the show, Andrew, where we like to marinate in our woes, you know, get it out there. You know, it's like a sort of catharsis. You know, you will feel better at the end of it, I'm sure. Right. So I might as well get the ball rolling. I had Salah in my team right up until the first deadline. And then for some reason was like, do you know what? I'm going to go for Mane. I'm going to go for it. And so often before the first deadline, obviously Salah got that hat trick, Mane blanked. And then I went and sold Mane immediately, and he got that haul. And then he got that haul against Chelsea. And I knew he was going to do something against Chelsea. I even said it on this podcast. I'm like, he's going to return against Chelsea. But I just deer in the headlights. I was just like, no, I'm going to sell him before the price drop. And sure, look. What about you? What's your biggest regret so far?
I've got a couple. So the Salah cap, I did the same thing. I didn't. So I took him out during the week. So it wasn't, you know, on the deadline, but on the podcast for the Hub, I was reminded the other day that I made a statement in pre-season. Why wouldn't you captain Salah at home against a newly promoted team? And I made that statement, and I had him in my team as captain. And Adam and Andy didn't. And then it turned out that on the deadline, I think they had him as captain and I didn't, because I kind of, you know, you overthink things, don't you? And I was like, well, Salah's got a good game week one, but then, you know, I don't fancy him for game week 2 and 3, whereas obviously he scored that, wherever it was, 40-odd points then on game week 1, so you're on the back foot already. But maybe even worse than this. And so I had Heung-min Son on game week 1, and Spurs looked dreadful against Everton. And I already kind of had a plan of Son up to Bruno for game week 2. So I took out Son before he scored 4 goals against Southampton, which I've never done before. So I missed out on Salah, captain game week 1, which is 40-odd points as captain. And then Son, I don't know, wherever he had, I don't even want to look. So I'm like, I had 22 points, whatever it was, in game week 2. So they're my 2 regret. And it's probably just a symptom of overthinking and overplanning, I think.
So you should have listened to our podcast, because I had him in as my lock of the week for guaranteed returns. Yeah, I think a lot of people had the same, maybe they had the same thought process. I just thought that Southampton backline was way too high up, and Son is like the perfect player to take advantage of that. Of course, I didn't buy him in myself. Obviously, I brought in Bruno Fernandes instead, and he blanked, and then I got rid of him, and then he scored. So, yeah, these are the same mistakes I think everyone is making, though. It's like everyone seems to be selling a player before they get a haul. Luckily, this week I kept Son, so I got those juicy 18 points.
Nice.
Even though there was a threat of injury, but I want to ask you about captaincy, because what is it about like this game where so many of us have these brain farts like right before the deadline, and we go, no, I'm going to change. Like I had another, but I think I've had one captaincy return, which is Aubameyang, and he only got like 5 points, so that wasn't even much of a success. Every other week I've gotten nothing, and it drives me up the wall seeing other managers have less returns, you know, per player, say. So I would have, my whole squad would be better, but because of captaincy, because I blank, I end up on similar points or less, and it's driving me up the wall. And I feel like I'm doing the right things, but just like that one decision is actually killed me last season. And I'm asking everyone, like, how can I fix this? It's just, it's so infuriating.
I think a strategy which I've thought about this year, and I haven't actually done it yet. I haven't executed it yet, but it was to permacap De Bruyne, because you know he's generally, you know, if not the highest, one of the highest scoring players in the game. He's the most consistent. You know, he's good for bonus. He's not going to get you many 17, 18, 20 point hauls, for example, but he's usually good for, you know, a 6, 8, 10, 12, or 14 haul in most games, actually, you know, and especially now, like now he's on penalties. If you think about it, you know, in game week one, no, I didn't have him in game week one because I couldn't afford him because of that incredibly difficult game they were supposed to have against Wolves, which turned out to be a walk in the park. And City actually looked fantastic, I thought, in that game. And De Bruyne in particular looked very good, very advanced. So that was my plan. But I actually went for Jimenez this weekend. And it turned out, I think in hindsight, obviously wasn't the right decision because he blanked. But it was between him and De Bruyne, but the way that City had been, you know, and all their injuries, I thought, you know what, I'm going to stick it on Jimenez. And obviously, De Bruyne played first and he blanked. And obviously, loads of people were on De Bruyne. So I was like, come on, here we go. Because with Jimenez, all you generally need is a goal and he mops up all the bonus. So that two would have been like 18, you know, had he have done it. But obviously, that didn't work out either. But I would also say, if I didn't have had Jimenez this weekend, I'd have probably gone for someone like Ings, you know, or something like that. Yeah. And they all blanked. And, you know, I think I talked about this at the start of the season. I think my strategy this year for captaincy, I'm trying to get to my core team of players who I kind of want throughout the season. So, you know, players like Bruno Fernandes, De Bruyne, etc. I think I'm just going to captain one of those most weeks and just hope for the consistency rather than the very, very odd and rare explosive, you know, return you can get off other players. Yeah.
Maybe leave that for like your triple captain. Try and count on the explosivity for that and go from there. Of course, I mean, the easiest thing is stick that on a double game week, obviously. But I had similar thought process when I went for De Bruyne as captain this week as well, because I was thinking penalties.
Yeah,
he's playing in the number 10 position and Leeds are giving up big chances. So I just thought it all added up. Obviously, then for the first half, I mean, he was playing almost as what, like a six or something? Like, it was so infuriating. That's the worst when you see it and you go, oh no, he's, you know, your captain's playing in the absolute like worst position possible for any returns. But look, it is what it is. I might take a leaf out of your book and do that, I think. But it is just so frustrating when you look at your team. And I was like, if I had, there's like four other players and I could have captained and I would have gotten decent returns. But look, I'm sure, you know, our listeners are sick of hearing me harp on about this, but anyway,
you got the job on the technicality of a legend who recommended you are nothing, you are a fool, and you are a waste of time. Good night.
Right, teams that we kind of got wrong. I mean, we've already touched on a little bit because you mentioned, you know, Man City and Wolves there.
Yeah,
but if we throw Man United into that mix, the teams who went far in Europe, I mean, we all kind of jump the gun too early because everyone was talking about their strategies to get Man City and Man United assets in for game week two. You save a transfer, maybe you have someone on the bench, and it turns out that we kind of needn't have bothered really. I know Bruno has done well the last two games, but none of them look great, those three, and they're usually quite reliable in terms of FPL. Are you surprised by how far behind they look?
I'm very surprised. I didn't realise the impact, actually, that I think Wolves losing their fullbacks would have, you know, kind of on their whole approach into how they play. I say that with Wolves. With Man United, the way they finished the season, they were absolutely sensational. Moving forward, chance after chance after chance. Martial on fire. Rashford playing well. With Greenwood, you know, he scored a few at the end of the season. And Bruno just like, you know, the puppeteer in the middle of the park, just kind of running the show. And they just look an absolute shadow of it. So that surprised me as well. City, I still think that City are a class act. I think they're missing a target man at front. I still think Sterling looks really dangerous. I think once Aguero's back, you know, I think we'll see a different City, and he might be back in a couple of weeks. I think the team that have surprised me most in kind of a negative way is the Chelsea boys, though. I've been so disappointed. I've had such high hopes for Werner, you know, and I actually thought he played well in his two opening games. I think he played up front in them both. He won a penalty in both games. I thought he looked very, very sharp. He only got the assist in the first game. He would have had the assist in the second game, you know, had they scored the penalty. But now he's playing on the left, you know, and Abraham up front, they just look so disjointed. I know they won 4-0, but it was a very uninspiring 4-0. However, I think what I would say about this, and this is where I personally think that people may come unstuck, right? So they will all get better. And I think I'm not shipping out Bruno Fernandes, Raul Jimenez. I'm even tempted to keep Timo Werner, which may sound mad, but Pulisic is going to be back next game. Surely he'll play on the left. You think Werner will go up front. Zayek might be back as well. I think we'll see a different team. Chelsea have got nice fixtures. So I think my advice, well, the advice I'm giving myself, and if, you know, if anyone else, is I see a lot of people taking out players like Kevin De Bruyne. You know, he's being taken out in the thousands. Bruno Fernandes, even Alexander-Arnold, you know, all right, they had an absolute stinker, right? And he hasn't looked the best. But those three players there, De Bruyne, Alexander-Arnold and Bruno, they were three players a month ago that they would have been the three locks in every single person's team, season-long locks, you know. And I see everyone taking them out for players like, you know, Maupay, James Rodriguez, Calvert-Lewin. And don't get me wrong, these players are playing fantastically well. And in the short term, they may well outscore them. But KDB, Alexander-Arnold and Bruno will do well over a season. And I'm worried for people who are taking these players out, because they may find themselves, you know, in 2 or 3 weeks with an absolute rabble of, you know, kind of middle placed and lower teams. Whereas, you know, it's going to be very, very hard to get back to a team then, you know, obviously unless you're wild card. But yeah, I think they're the ones we got wrong. In terms of teams that have surprised, I mean, what a difference in West Ham. I mean, they've been absolutely fantastic. Antonio, like what a player he is. He just
And just to interrupt you, it also shows the value in evaluating performance over results. Because if you watch that Arsenal West Ham game, I know they lost 2-1.
Yeah.
But West Ham very clearly outplayed them. Yes, and then they rock up against Wolves and destroy them. And then they absolutely tear apart Leicester City. So always evaluate the performance over the result, because even though they were terrible on the first day, they looked way better against Arsenal. And now you're kind of thinking, Jesus, there's a lot of good value there as well.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. You know, I think Soucek, you know, at 4.9. I don't think he's scored many points yet. I think he's got one assist, but he's looked incredibly dangerous. I think he's a perfect fifth mid. Their fixtures from game week 8 look really good. But I think a player like Soucek, and indeed Antonio, kind of fixture proof, because they're just bulls. You know, they just bulldoze everything in their path. It doesn't matter who it is, sort of thing. So, and the other team, I think, you know, who've obviously surprised everyone in a really positive way has been Everton. I think, I say surprise, so I actually had Calvert-Lewin in my game week 1 team. So, you know, I got his hat trick. I took him out on my wild card in game week 3, but let's not go there. But, you know, the way Richarlison, James and Calvert-Lewin have played together with, you know, Alan and Doucouré in behind, I think have been superb. I'm not sure. I think that Calvert-Lewin is, you know, he's obviously playing really well in his own right, but I think actually Richarlison and James Rodriguez are the actual kind of architects in there.
I would agree. Yeah,
wonderful, wonderful players, and he can't help but get the chances and score the goals. What are your thoughts on Everton?
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything. I'm very much in agreement with you in terms of Richarlison. I think he's just been brilliant. His kind of underlying numbers and his stats, you would look at them and you go, "Jesus, they're more impressive." And you would say, in the long term, he seems like he's the one that would have the more sustainable returns, that he would be getting more assists and goals over a long period of time. But I mean, this is, in terms of now, we might as well move into players that we were right and or wrong about. Mostly wrong, I think. Dominic Calvert-Lewin was one. And Everton in general, because, you know, I didn't know what to make of them, because after the restart, they clearly were playing with sandals on, because they weren't putting up anything. And now all of a sudden, they look amazing. And Dominic Calvert-Lewin was just that, one of those I thought, yeah, maybe he's a bit too streaky. I don't know if I trust him a huge amount. I said this to Will on the podcast, you know, before the season started, and I was shown up. I've been royally shown up. He's scored in every game, and now I've had to admit my mistake and I brought him in. But at the same time, Calvert-Lewin just seems like the ideal fantasy Premier League asset. He just pops up in the right places to get returns, and I think that's exactly what you need. You don't need somebody who's necessarily like amazing in all-round play, you know, as I think James and Richarlison pretty much are. So he's just that perfect fantasy football player, in my opinion.
I do think Richarlison moving forward may be a better pick. You know, he missed a couple of chances. I mean, missed a one-on-one against Spurs, you know, in the first week, where he kind of rounded the keeper and spooned it wide. It seems he's on penalties as well, which obviously this year looks like a big thing as well. And now he's only, I think, 0.4 maybe, more than the striker. So whereas at the start of the season he was a million more, now he's only 0.4. So, you know, if you haven't got Calvert-Lewin, I think Richarlison, you know, I'm not sure they can keep up their level of performance. I think one injury in the front line may mean, you know, they regress a little. But I've been stunned by this before. You know, I'm very much a traditional manager. I trust premium players from premium teams. I'm never really a fan of getting in players from, you know, kind of middling teams. I missed out on Ings last year because I was like, oh, it's only Ings. And after 9 weeks of him successive goals, I was like, oh, it's only Ings, he can't keep it up. And even Vardy in 2016, when he broke the record, even after his eighth or ninth game of scoring, I was like, oh, he won't keep it up. But it seems nowadays that the game has changed, actually, you know, and these strikers are able to keep it up. So, I can't say that Everton aren't great options, because obviously they are. I just wonder how sustainable the form is, but, you know, we will see.
So you already mentioned Timo Werner. Kai Havertz is one I had on my team. So that, I mean, just complete bust, unfortunately. And obviously they're not inexpensive. So that was really disappointing. In terms of other ones, I mean, Shea Adams was a proper bandwagon that so many people got on. And now I'm like, oh, why did we even bother? Especially when you consider some of the strikers around that price range who have started pretty strongly. Matt Doherty just has been a real big disappointment since going to Spurs, in terms of fantasy football anyway. And then obviously Alan Saint-Maximin. Any other names you'd add to that who you really expected to hit the ground running?
Yeah, I'd probably add in Martial. So I was quite bullish on Martial pre-season. My kind of front two, as ridiculous as it sounds now, but I was so bullish on Martial and Werner are going to absolutely rip it up, you know. And maybe not him, you know, he won the penalty on the weekend. He looked quite sharp, obviously, before his red card. But with United not clicking, he hasn't really had the chances and stuff. And I find him to be very much a mood player. You know, if United are playing well, he plays well and scores goals. If not, he's kind of nowhere to be seen. So I'd say Martial for me has been a disappointment. I do think with Che Adams and even Doherty to a slightly lesser degree have been very unlucky. The saves that keepers have pulled out of Che Adams has been incredible. His XG has been off the scale.
He keeps getting in really good positions and having the good shots. And yeah, there's a few times where I watch the highlights and I'm going like, Jesus, how didn't he score there? Like, he's exception. Well, I mean, at a certain point, do you say he's unlucky or is he just a poor finisher?
So he pulled a save out of Guaita in game week one, the Palace game, and Guaita pulled out an absolute worldie. And then he did the same against Spurs the week after, where he shot and Lloris, you know, full stretch, tipped it over the bar. They were two incredible saves. So I do think he's been unfortunate. And I had Doherty as well, actually, in game week two, I think it was, when he got the assist for Kane in the fourth minute for a goal that was ruled out, you know. And so, you know, he's getting up there, you know, obviously not as much as he was at Wolves because they are playing in, you know, in kind of a back four. But I think it's easy to say that players have been bad picks point-wise. But to your point earlier, I think, you know, if you watch the games as well, I do think, you know, there's an, you know, a kind of element of bad luck with some of the decisions as well. But Martial's not. He's just been, I think he's just had a bit of a stinker, to be honest.
So. Yeah, I think so. Like a lot of those Man United players. Now, moving on to the deadline day transfers. So I just want to see if any of the players who moved on the final day of the window kind of change anything for you. We saw Ben Godfrey go to Everton. Fulham got a pair of centre-backs. Ruben van Agra finally left Wolves, ending everyone's misery with him and that supposed like banker of a differential that everyone was going to get. So he's gone. And of course, sadly, Gunnar Soares is gone. So that will have obviously a huge effect on Arsenal. But I think the two big ones are Thomas Partey and Alex Telles. So Partey should make Arsenal more solid in midfield. He wouldn't obviously be a fantasy football option, but it'll be interesting to see what effect he has on Arsenal in general. I want to get your opinion on Telles though, because obviously he's kind of seen as an upgrade at left back to Luke Shaw. People will look at his numbers. You know, he's gotten 23 goals and 41 assists in his senior career. He's almost 28, it should be added. You know, looking at those numbers, some people conclude that he's some sort of superstar attacking fullback, but actually most of his end product comes from set pieces. And I know that, I think he was on penos as well for Porto. So last year he scored 8 penalties. And so he'll get a lot of assists there from free kicks and stuff, which is kind of irrelevant for Man United because you've got Bruno Fernandes there. The only thing I'll say is he's left-footed and they don't have a lot of left-footed players there. And so maybe he'll take the odd corner or free kick because of that. But do you think that'll have any major effect FPL-wise?
Not at the moment. I know it's kind of a boring answer, but the way United looked on the weekend, I don't think it would have mattered if they'd have had, you know, Andy Robertson at left back or, you know, or kind of anyone else. Robertson's a bad example because they shipped 7 a couple of hours later. But I think there's, you know, something wrong with United as a team and their defence. I know you mentioned Maguire at the start. I'm not a fan of Maguire at all. And by Lindelof, you know, very average. I like Wan-Bissaka, but I just think overall that whole defence and that whole team at the moment are on such a downer that I wouldn't go near him. However, I would say that, you know, I touched on Martial being a kind of a mood player. I do think that Man United kind of, they're very streaky, aren't they? They're either dreadful or they're absolutely wonderful. So when they do start to kind of click a little bit, and when they click, you know, they beat teams 3-0, 4-0, you know, and I can see then, you know, that he may be decent option. I think, you know, I even think Luke Shaw towards the back end of last season was a decent option. I think he had a couple of assists, didn't he? And also, as you said, you know, you can see with Man City and Liverpool, so you've got Mahrez taking some corners over on that right-hand side, the in-swingers. Robertson is doing the same now with Liverpool. So, you know, you could potentially see him taking some corners on the one side and Bruno on the other. You know, I don't know how Bruno would feel about that, but I think for me, it's a bit of a wait and see. I just, you know, especially at 5.5, you know, I just can't look at United defence. I think when you're looking at defenders, the first thing you have to look at is the defence and not the attacking returns. And if the defence is awful, I just wouldn't bother. And that's where they are at the moment, I'm afraid.
Yeah, but I think that's the case with a lot of defences at the minute. I think, to be honest with you, I might be looking at attack first rather than defence because I don't think anybody looks very capable of keeping clean sheets. But yeah, I think you've made some salient points there about not just Telles, but about Man United in general. Right, if we look ahead to the future real quickly and what strategies we can kind of employ, I mean, it might be a bit pointless trying to strategize in the current climate, but I suppose one thing I have definitely taken away from the opening month is that no one is a banker. And you shouldn't make rash decisions based on one game. What about you? What are you thinking looking into into the next month or two?
You know, as you kind of mentioned, I think the variance that we're seeing week to week and also game to game, you know, I think we mentioned before we started that after, you know, because every game is live and they're one after the other now, I'm almost changing my mind on my strategy every two hours because,
you know, I've noticed that because, you know, if you go onto Twitter, especially if you go onto FPL Twitter, and there's like everybody is giving their analysis and it's like we're now we're actually almost seeing too much now, you know, and it's giving us too much to kind of chew on.
It is, you know, who'd have thought at 6 o'clock, just after, you know, Spurs had and hammered Liverpool, that, you know, Grealish and Ollie Watkins, for example, would be, you know, the kind of cream of the crop a couple of hours later. And it seems to be just after every single game, all these players become essential, but they're also last week's points as well. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, Watkins and Grealish and Kane and Son were ever a bad picks, but I think my kind of takeaway, and you know, it's very difficult because I'm trying to pull on all my, you know, all my years of experience, and it's always don't panic, stick to the plan. But it's very, very tough when, you know, the price rises for the players you've got your eye on. They're very aggressive, you know, players like Adams, for example, who's currently stinking out my team, dropped again last night, you know. So it's very tough. But I would, my advice, rightly or wrongly, I think I touched on it earlier, is I wouldn't stray too far from the core players who, you know, are proven assets who are going to do well over the course of the season. And by those, I think the three I touched on earlier, just for example, I think De Bruyne, Alexander-Arnold and Bruno, I wouldn't, you know, you can maybe get away with switching out one, maybe two at a time. I think even that's brave. You know, Bruno's proven in the last fortnight, you know, he's only played a game and a half and he scored, you know, he got a goal and assist against Brighton and he got a goal against Spurs. He only needs the sniff of anything, whether it be a corner, a free kick, a through ball, a penalty, whatever it is. And De Bruyne is the same, right? So, you know, City could potentially have had a penalty, you know, in the Leeds game, which De Bruyne would have taken and very likely scored, for example. And Alexander-Arnold, I forget who they played last week, but Alexander-Arnold and Rob, it was when Robertson scored and they won 3-1 in the end, was it? But everyone was raving, you know, we need double Liverpool defence. And now all of a sudden it's like, get rid of him after one game. I just think we need to calm down. Players like De Bruyne, Alexander-Arnold and Bruno for me are season-long holds, more or less. So I suppose that's my kind of advice, is don't panic and don't end up with a team full of bottom-end players just because they're the ones who scored the goals last week.
My big kind of thing on here, you know, the thing I try to drill home to everyone is be wary of making sideways moves. Get rid of the worst player in your squad, because then you're constantly upgrading. If you get rid of a player who is either not playing or he's not performing, and like you said, he's one of those lower end kind of players, you can't go wrong. You can only improve your team. So don't be worried about making sideways moves, about going from De Bruyne to, because I think everyone has got this FOMO and they're going, oh my God, you know, Heung-min Son got 4 goals. I need to get him in. It's like, oh no, he's injured. Now I need to get him out. And now I need to get Bruno in and you know, going back and forth. It's not going to do you any good. And your team is not going to have any consistency. It's going to be all over the place. There's so many things on this topic I'd love to go on about, but I think unfortunately we don't have the time. I do think, just as some parting notes, I think planning is definitely not gone out the window, but it's definitely very hard. And I kind of feel like at this point, almost you can almost forget about fixtures and fixture difficulty, because anything can happen now in any given game. We've been saying it for years about the Premier League, but it's finally happened. Anybody can beat anybody on any given weekend. Anybody can hammer anyone on any given weekend. And yeah, so I mean, I would love to, maybe on another occasion we can go into more of that, Andrew, but I think for now that's the end of this show. We hope that we have guided you through the choppy waters of Fantasy Premier League. If you're wondering, where can I get more FBL content like this? Well, you can head to thefootballfaithful.com to find that and more. And obviously you can head to fantasyfootballhub.co.uk. Follow us on social by searching for Football Faithful. You can follow me at The Novelty Act. Andrew, where can our listeners find you online?
On Twitter at Fergie222 and on Fantasy Football Hub. We do the FPL, the podcast that comes on a Tuesday, and the Sky podcast on a Sunday night as well. So be sure to give those a listen.
Excellent. So hopefully people will find you there and listen in. If you've been listening to this, you probably heard my dog walking around like a mad thing chasing his toy. Thanks for joining me today, Andrew.
Thank you so much for having me on. Really, really enjoyed. Thank you.
Excellent. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with a preview of Game Week 5.